for it.
Yes, very brief. Anybody who's been following dogfish management, please feel free to help me out, because I've, you know, had my hands full with herring and haven't been too actively involved in dogfish issues as of late. As all of you know, the Mid-Atlantic Council staff is in the lead with the dogfish management. So I've just been communicating with Jim Armstrong, and he asked me to go ahead and do the briefing for this council meeting. This is our first framework meeting, our first meeting for Framework 2 to the Dogfish Plan. The Mid-Atlantic Council had their first meeting at their October meeting. We will do the second Framework 2 meeting in November, which is the meeting where we'll actually be taking an action to approve the framework. This is just a briefing update kind of meeting today. And the Mid-Atlantic Council, the Mid-Atlantic Council is actually doing their final framework meeting next week. This is October. Okay, so when was the first, the last Mid-Atlantic Council meeting was the first framework meeting, whenever that was. Next week's meeting is their final framework meeting, and then we will do our final framework meeting in November. Framework 2 is in the council binders, the draft document, and it is a one-action framework adjustment that is specific to the biological reference points for the dogfish resource and the process for implementing changes to the overfishing definition. Essentially, what Framework 2 does is changes the FMP and changes the regulations to allow status determination criteria and overfishing definition reference points to automatically update in the FMP once they have gone through a peer-reviewed process. That's all it is. It's basically just providing a mechanism so that if we get a stock assessment that's been peer-reviewed and a reference point comes out of it, as you know, we don't have a reference point right now. This framework is providing the mechanism for that reference point to automatically be implemented in the FMP rather than having to go through a plan amendment to make that happen. So that's really all that the framework adjustment does, is it is a vehicle to allow for a much more timely update of status determination criteria and reference points when they become available. And if you look at the executive summary on the Framework 2 document, it explains it pretty clearly in the second paragraph. And it just allows for updated scientific information to be incorporated into the FMP in a much more timely manner. And there is not going to be this framework. My understanding is there'll be a categorical exclusion for this framework, so there's not going to be an environmental assessment or an environmental impact statement or anything like that, since it's just a one-action framework adjustment. There's a proposed action, which is to do this, and there's some discussion in the document about the peer reviews that can occur. It doesn't necessarily have to go through a SAW-SARC process. In fact, I believe that Dogfish is scheduled to be assessed later next year through the TRAC process. But there in the framework document, there's actually like there's a hierarchy or a list of various different types of peer reviews that could occur. It could be through the SSC or a SAW-SARC or something like that. But the concept behind the framework is once a reference point is agreed upon and peer-reviewed, rather than having the two councils have to do a plan amendment to implement that reference point, this would provide a mechanism for it to automatically happen. And that's pretty much it. So today is just a briefing on the framework adjustment, and then, like I said, the Mid-Atlantic Council is going to take their vote at their meeting next week, and we will take our vote in November. Jim Armstrong from the Mid-Atlantic Council will be here at the November Council meeting to answer any more specific questions or technical questions, and we will also at that point have the recommendation from the Mid-Atlantic Council on which to base our recommendation. We will also be dealing with spiny dogfish specifications at the November Council meeting, but that process is really just getting underway now, and I'm not entirely clear on how that's all going to work. Jim will be coming up to the November Council meeting to handle the discussion on the specifications, and I believe he is planning a joint dogfish committee meeting for the day before our November Council meeting to get a recommendation from the joint committee regarding the specifications. I do know that the ASMFC Technical Committee is meeting next week, and then there will be some follow-up by the Spiny Dogfish Monitoring Committee, and all of that will feed into the specification process, which we will also address in November. So November will be the final Framework 2 meeting and the specifications meeting, and today is really just a briefing and an opportunity for questions and answers, if there are any, regarding the Framework 2 document.
Thanks, Lori. Deacon Dogg?
How'd you know, John? Fine by me. Anything to make the process move faster and to better incorporate updated, better scientific advice. My only question would be to the writer of the document, I guess to Jim Armstrong in particular. I would request a little bit more information, a little bit more clarity regarding the figure one, where you have three different paths or possible outcomes, and I need to have a better appreciation as to what is meant by clear scientific advice and unclear scientific advice. When it's clear, you go down pathway one or pathway two. When it's unclear, you go down number three. Just I'd like some further elaboration as to what they mean by that, because I think in most cases scientific advice is, you know, unclear. Very seldom is it clear. So what is meant by clear versus unclear? Because you can certainly have unclear scientific advice and get a consensus. But the consensus is for clear scientific advice versus lack of consensus and unclear scientific advice. So just some better explanation as to what is meant by clear and unclear. How would that be determined, for example?
Lori, is that a technical term?
Clearly, it is, yes.
Nice softball. You swung right at it. Anyone else in the council? I just had a question on page, I guess it's 9. There's a list of different bodies that can perform this task. It mentions the MIDS SSC, and I assume the reason it's the MID and not the MID in New England is because it's a MID-led plan, right? You have the lead. The MID has a lead on the plan. But then I started to read the language below, and it talks about a subset of the SSC providing guidance. And I was just wondering if that's – does that mean that the subset of the SSC – and this could be a question you could bring home with you, Pat. That subset would be given the authority to provide the guidance to the council, or would it have to go back through the SSC for final approval? In other words, are you creating a working group, and then the working group brings the information to the SSC, which then blesses it, so to speak?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, the working group is the staff. The staff is the one who is the clearinghouse. If the council members believe they have a problem with understanding the position that the SSC has taken or the position that we've received to take action on, the staff will clarify those differences with the SSC. The SSC will work with the monitoring committee if there are any other people involved with that. They collectively will then make a recommendation to the council of which we will take action on. So it doesn't have to go back to them twice. It's all a single-step process.
Okay. Thank you. Dave Gatham.
Does the monitoring committee, is that does the AFMFC and the Mid-Atlantic use the same monitoring committee, or are they separate?
Mr. Chairman, yes, they consist of the same group of people, so to speak. They combine their energies, ASMFC staff and or monitoring committee and the that's the technical committee and the monitoring committee. They have joint responsibility on each one of these plans where there are implications that the decision of one group might have a negative effect on the other group. So they are a joint effort in every one of these plans.
Okay, so then how did we arrive at the current situation we're in where the states have an 8 million pound quota and the feds have a 4 million pound one and the same people gave the advice?
If you want Dave to answer that, he's more articulate there, but the answer is simple. State waters fisheries are driven by different guidelines. We do not fall under the regulation or guidance of Magnuson-Stevens. So if we collectively, the state, decide to do something else, and we do, and we did with the 8 million pounds versus the 4 million pounds, we typically, when we use that whole quota up, we end up paying the penalty the following year, just the way it is. But we also changed to a 3,000-pound daily limit in order to make it worthwhile to have these fishermen be able to sell product and to harvest the whole quota. So there are two parts to that. But ASMFC works separately away from and outside the bounds of the council, the Mid-Atlantic and the federal government. We try to be as consistent as possible. Often we are not.
Okay. It would just lead to my last statement then. As this goes forward, I would hope that all these groups, the MID, us, and the AFMFC, could seek a common policy with equal trip limits and quotas across all these various political boundaries. And I would hope that they could find a trip limit that will keep the fishery open for the maximum period of time so that we can cut down on the waste. The situation right now, I mean, whatever that number is, and we could have a debate that would last all afternoon, I'm sure, about what that number should be. But the situation right now where you have a directed fishery in state waters and 3 miles away, you got people hurling over the fish because the feds are closed and they're not allowed in state waters, is not good for the fishermen. It's not good for the fish. It's not solving the problems one bit. So I would urge in the strongest possible terms that people try and find some common ground here and come up with something that's uniform across all the waters and will keep the fishery open longer than a month and a half or something, because all we're doing is converting land into discards. And I know there are a percentage of these fish live, but it isn't that high a percentage. The number of dead dogfish on the bottom is a total waste to everybody, and it's we're just not doing the right thing with dogfish. And I would urge people to try and think up a better way.
Dr. Doug, you want to take a bite at that?
Yes, I agree entirely with what David Gethel said, and I'm anxiously awaiting the results of monitoring committee meeting next week. Or is it this week? Maybe it's this week. Next week. Where we'll have some further discussion about the status of dogfish. The 2008 spring data point from the Bottom Trawl Survey will be available. And I've got every reason to believe that it's very likely that we will find out that the dogfish is rebuilt, that we have hit the target that doesn't exist, but 200,000 metric tons or so of large females. And if indeed that is true, it changes the complexion somewhat regarding how we can move forward with spiny dogfish management. At least that's my perspective. ASMFC will, of course, react to that information. Both councils have to react to that information. Of course, we have the benchmark assessment that will be done next year. That will certainly play a major role. I'm optimistic that we'll have a change in how we do business with dogfish at the federal level as well as the state. And to your point, so the question that was asked by David, yeah, sometimes it's hard to figure out, if not all the time, it's hard to figure out why is ASMFC doing it this way and the councils are doing it a different way. Scientific advice that comes to the councils is through the monitoring committee, and ASMFC is pretty much guided by the advice from the technical committee of ASMFC. So they're separate and distinct, but of course there's some crossover knowledge. And ASMFC tends to be guided by our own technical committee.
Anyone else on the council? Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Following what David said, ASMFC seems to want to take the maximum that they can take based on what the information is that the technical committee provided us. The council typically is driven by the position that the regional office takes, or the most careful quota, if you will. And we do have a rebuilding plan, and even with that in mind, the state has felt that the recommendations that are given to us could be a little more flexible. And again, as I said, it gets us in trouble every once in a while at ASMFC, so the overage comes off the top the next year. But there's another reason why we have that dichotomy. The other thing is, you folks seem to have a different scheme, if you will. You want a larger daily limit because of the number of folks that can participate and the availability of the animal and what the need for the market is to process. So we're driven by two or three different things. The Mid-Atlantic folks have to travel up this way to process. We don't have a lot of processing capability down there. It's all up here in New England. So that also drives the decision as to what our daily quota is. So there are many extenuating circumstances. So until you see all of those together and put them together in one room and then try to drive the point home that we need to be consistent and be on the same page, it's very difficult to manage because each group has their own differences. The same way with the north-south regional break that we have along the coast. 52% in the north part and 48% in the lower half of the states. And because of where the fish are and are prosecuted, they're in the north early in the year. So typically, folks in the north get the first shot at them, and hopefully they restrain their harvest so that they don't go over. In recent years, the south has not been able to participate very much. So there's another problem to deal with. So.
Okay. Anyone in the audience? Eric?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Eric Brazier, Hook Fishermen's Association. I was looking through the document, and I noticed on page 9, looking at the same list that you had mentioned earlier, the document provides 5 authorities through which periodic reviews outside the SARC process could be conducted. And I'll list them here for the benefit of the council. Number 1 is the TRAC. Number 2 is the Mid-Atlantic's SSC. Number 3 is a Mid-Atlantic externally contracted review with independent experts. Number 4 is a NIMS internally conducted review. And number 5 is a NIMS externally contracted review. And while I understand that the Mid-Atlantic is the lead on the spiny dogfish plan, I don't see the New England Council listed here, either the SSC or an externally contracted review with an independent expert. And given the discussion that we're having right now and given the accounts from many of the fishermen that I've talked to throughout New England, dogfish management is becoming more and more of a critical issue. And I would just urge the council to consider whether or not they feel as if the New England SSC or independent expert contracted by the NEFMC would be appropriate for this list, and if so, to make a recommendation to the MID to allow for New England representation on this list. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Anything further? Okay. Thanks, Laura. The next item is a review of experimental fishery permit application.